Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Everyone's asleep.
In the shadow of crime, resigned to be the victims of fear, of violence, of social impotence.
You step outside, you risk your life. You take a drink of water, you risk your life. And nowadays you breathe and you risk your life.
The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. And there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.
That is why we distance ourselves. That's why we make jokes. We don't do it because it's fun. We do it so we can get by. And sometimes because it's fun.
Your levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead. Make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio, for the benefit of the intelligence agencies listening, because we all know that how up to date they like to keep. Now, my very special guest joining me today for an hour will be Derek Tyler. Derek, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Nice to be here.
I understand that you've just recently become an Amazon's best-selling author kind of thing overnight after being on, what was it, Coast to Coast AM?
Yeah, it was Coast to Coast. It was Art Bell's show. It's hosted by Connie Willis now. And there was such a big response to that show that I got 400 hits on my friend request list on Facebook the next day, and the sales spiked through the roof for a little while, and the book shot up to number one. I don't think it's still there, but it was for a moment, and that's all that matters.
That's beautiful, man. That's what happens when you've got 29 million listeners. Okay, so let's talk about UFOs then, all right? So firstly, what's the name of your book there?
The name of the book is called Alien Contact, The Difficult Truth. It's available on Amazon.
Okay. Now, the name of this game here is, if it's not strange, then it's probably got nothing to do with aliens.
That seems to be the way of the world. If it's not out of the box, it probably doesn't have aliens responsible for it, because their technology is far beyond anything we can imagine. We can't even guess what they're capable of, because some of these civilizations are literally millions of years ahead of us. And just as, I mean, if you go back 100 years in our time, we're doing things every day that they thought were impossible. We can't even imagine what they'd be doing in a million years. They're beyond science fiction.
Yeah. So sci-fi that it's beyond sci-fi.
It is. Some of the strangest stories that you hear end up to be true.
Well, if that alien technology is so far ahead of us, and it's created by an alien mind at the same frickin' time here, the capacity for human beings to understand it and more or less actually have an ability to comprehend the universe in which we dwell is somewhat diminished, I think.
Well, I think that we probably will never have the ability to understand much of their technology. And that's really not even just my thoughts. That's the feeling of the military as well. They believe that some of the technology which they've been loaned or given by the aliens is beyond the capacity of humans to ever truly understand, and much less be able to replicate ourselves. Some of it they've managed to back engineer, but some of it is just it's so far over our heads that we can't even comprehend it.
Unless you were Nikola Tesla.
Yes, he could comprehend a lot of things that we, the rest of us, can't.
Yeah,
and I've heard that
they stole
all of his notes when he died, and that they got time travel technology from his notes largely.
Mm. Now, what's the difference between an alien abduction and a military abduction? Because if the military is using alien technology and that kind of thing, they'd probably be able to get away with it, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they can get away with it, and they have been getting away with it. And there's a far larger percentage of the abductions than people realize are being pulled off by the military rather than aliens. And they have various ways they utilize in order to make it appear that it is an alien abduction that's taking place. So that the logic to them is, if someone talks about it, then everybody will think they're crazy and not listen, and we won't get caught. And this way they never have to be held responsible, because of course it's a capital crime.
And of course the military being run by psychopaths, taking responsibility and being caught for what they actually do isn't high on the agenda.
Right, because it's not the whole military. Many, I'm sure the majority of the military is doing what they're supposed to be doing. But these people in the black ops programs, they have the ability to operate completely above the law with complete anonymity, and this alien technology that they utilize gives them the ability to do things such as abduct civilians with complete impunity. There's no way to catch them.
And wasn't there a treaty between aliens and humans actually pertaining to, like, harvesting rights of the U.S. population back in the day? Was it Eisenhower or something?
Yes, there was a treaty signed under Eisenhower. They realized at the time that they had no effective defense against these aliens. They were just kind of getting used to the idea that we were being visited, I guess. And they didn't have any way to defend the population. They didn't have any way to stop them from overflying our territory at will, doing what they wanted. We couldn't catch their craft. We couldn't outmaneuver them. They would just fly right away from us, even our fastest fighters. And they were already abducting people. They've apparently been doing that for quite a very long time. So the military basically said, well, we will take what we can get, and we'll give them permission to do these things that they're doing anyway already, and we can't stop. So the deal that was made, both sides agreed to not release the news that they were here. They both agreed to keep it undercover because it made both of their lives easier by doing that. And basically, the aliens agreed to give us occasional advances in technology. Mostly the military was interested in military technology, of course. But some of the advances have been in other areas. And in exchange, we gave them official permission to live here, to overfly our territory without being hassled or being attacked. We haven't always kept our word to that. We gave them permission to abduct a certain number of our citizens per year with the stipulation that they would provide us yearly with a list of names of the people they had abducted. And they were given permission to kill some of our people if they were found to be genetically defective. And we also agreed to build at our expense a number of undersea and underground bases, which were either jointly occupied or were for the aliens' use alone. They already had bases of their own here and have had for many years. The reptilians particularly live in underground caverns. They started out, most of them, I understand, as natural cavern systems and were later enlarged. But I'm told they can be as deep as 25 miles under the ground. And I've also heard recently that they have begun extending and enlarging these systems so that they extend underneath most of our major cities now. In other words, if we want to attack their bases, we have to take out our city first to get to them.
Interesting. Well, when you're getting down deep into the earth, you're talking about an enormous amounts of heat. How are they dealing with that?
Oh, they like it that way. They're reptilians. They like it to be hot. They like it to be nice and warm. And they've basically agreed to for the most part, stay underground as long as we keep them fed. There are a number of different types of reptilian beings. The Dracos seem to be the leaders. They're supposedly the royalty caste, and I don't know about the others. I don't know that this pertains to the others, but the Draco are known to feed on humans. They they seem to become addicted to adrenaline-soaked human flesh. And so what they do is they will take, and they prefer babies and young children because their flesh hasn't yet been polluted by nicotine and caffeine and all the other things that we do to our bodies. And they will take these children and they will basically torture them. And they will scare them as much as they can in order to flush their bodies with adrenaline. Sometimes they will amputate a hand, for instance.
That's almost identical to the stories that we hear about Illuminati child sacrifice cults in the United States. So do they get that from them, did they?
Well, they probably get that from the reptilians, yes. That's kind of a complicated story, but the reptilians will not eat, the Draco will not eat anything apparently which has not been freshly killed. So they basically, after these kids have been terrified, they will then consume them alive. And the cults that you were just referring to, well, the thing about the Draco is they look exactly like the spitting image of our depiction of Satan. They've got vestigial wings. They've got horns. They're about 8 foot tall. And they look just like what we would picture Satan to look like. And so, they are what's known as hyperdimensional beings. They exist naturally in a dimension which is inaccessible to us. And we can't see them unless they pop through into our dimension. They have the ability to do that at least for certain periods of time. It takes a lot of energy apparently to do it. But they can, in their native dimension, they can be present in the room with you and you won't know it. They can be standing there looking at you, and they can act as energy vampires. They can literally drain the energy from your aura and use it to feed themselves energetically. And they like to they can manipulate people's situations so that they are put into situations where they start projecting emotions of a very strong nature, such as heartbreak, bitterness, anger, fear. They love fear. And when we feel those emotions, they're very strong emotions, and we put out a lot of energy when we feel them because they're so intense. And that energy is released through our aura and is basically vacuumed up by these reptilians and used to power their own selves.
Now, you say that the world's actually being silently colonized by these creatures. You know, they're being using hybrids to get into the society, right? And they're slowly changing our genetic makeup by inserting themselves into the population.
Yes, it seems that way. The classic ETs, the grays with the big dark eyes, I believe that those are actually eye covering rather than their natural eyes. But the ones that we're all familiar with are... they're not a naturally occurring species. They are a genetically engineered race, which was created by the reptilians thousands of years ago as an experiment in creating intelligent life. The reptilians are known to be master genetic engineers. And the grays were considered to be a failed experiment, and they were therefore relegated to slavery. They are basically used to do the reptilians' dirty work, including abduction of humans. And there are many people who are abducted worldwide that are not reported, and they're never brought back. Many abductees are brought back, but it depends on why they want you. If you're just a food item, if you abduct a child from a low caste family in India, the cops don't care. You know, no one's going to report it, no one's going to take it to the news, because they simply don't care. And those children can be abducted and we'll never hear about it. They'll never be counted. And the reptilians have agreed to basically remain underground for the most part, as long as we keep them supplied with food, which we do. If you remember the livestock mutilations back in the 70s, where livestock all across America, and I think around the world too, were being, mutilated, they were having all the blood, every drop of blood was drained from their bodies. Their organs were being cored out, their eyes, their sexual organs were sliced off with lasers, cored out with lasers. And humans were found mutilated in the same manner. It wasn't just livestock. The humans were covered up very quickly so that, that news never went out to the press. But the reason for these livestock mutilations was that the gray aliens do not have a digestive tract like we do. They don't have an esophagus, a stomach, none of that stuff. So they, in order to intake and excrete nutrients, they smear a liquid slurry on their skin and absorb it through their pores. The slurry is composed of hydrogen peroxide, which is a stabilizing and an antibacterial agent, and is mixed with human blood and human or cattle blood and certain enzymes and hormones that they can get out of our various organs. And the reason that these livestock were being slaughtered and drained of their blood was to provide food for the grays. And that's also why a lot of people who've been on board spacecraft with the grays during abductions report that the grays in their spacecraft smell terrible. It's because they've been smearing blood all over their skin, and it also comes back out through the pores. It's the only way they have to excrete waste. So it's nothing good, obviously. In the early 80s, the scientists at Lawrence Livermore Laboratories discovered a way to synthesize human blood in large quantities. When they did, the livestock mutilations, for the most part, ceased. The blood, which is being synthesized at Livermore Labs, is basically transferred to the grays.
And have you seen any of the people that have gone through these sort of abductions and things like that? How has it actually affected them being on those ships? I mean, you yourself were abducted.
Oh, it's very bad. I've interviewed over 3,000 abductees myself over the past 20 years or so. And I've heard the same story over and over and over. I can tell them their story before they even tell me what happened to them by now. I've heard it so many times. And in my own case, the story was much, much the same in a lot of ways. And it makes a person very quickly, if you realize that you're an abductee, and most people never do, because they delete the memories, but they don't always do it perfectly. But most people who are abducted, I believe, will never realize it at all. But if you do realize it, you quickly become very desperate, I guess you'd say, to do anything you can to stop them from coming back. Because in my own case, they were coming at one point up to three times a week. And that's tremendously hard. You try to stay awake all night. You know, you think, if I can just stay awake, they won't take me. But it doesn't help. They can put you to sleep whenever they want you to go to sleep. Locked doors and windows don't help, because they literally can walk right through your walls. They can teleport into your house, or they can walk right through your walls. It's not science fiction. It's not magic. It's simply highly advanced physics. They can match their density to the density of a door or wall and step through it. And I've seen an American military officer do the same thing once during a military abduction, during which they had grays working for them during this abduction. They had special forces, and they had a couple grays of their own. But the person who was in charge of this abduction at the time, I don't know what rank he was, but he had a chest, you know, one of those chest boards full of ribbons and stuff like they have. And they were going to abduct some people from another apartment in the building where I lived. And he simply stepped up. I'm told it's a device that can attach to the belt. I don't know that that's true. He stepped up to this door, and it was like a flashbulb lit off all around him. He just flashed a light, and he was through the door. A few seconds later, he came out leading the people that lived there by the hands, opened the door from the inside, and walked out with them. So it's a technology that we don't anticipate. It's a technology that we don't expect or look for. And so that makes it even easier for them to get away with this. You very quickly develop paranoia. You very quickly become isolated because you have undergone a horrific experience. There's nothing fun about an alien abduction. It's all bad from my own experience. There's no such thing as a friendly abduction by definition. And most people who undergo these things for an extended period of time will end up developing post-traumatic stress disorder, shell shock. because there is no support group. There is no psychiatrist you can talk to. There's no one to tell at all. You tell your wife, you might end up divorced.
What's interesting about that is that conspiracy theorists who find out that the world's run by ruthless criminal sociopaths often develop the same kind of disorders. And one of the most difficult parts about the disorder is that when you try to tell people the traumas that actually caused it to you, your brain naturally jumbles all the facts and details around as you're saying them, so that when somebody's listening to a very traumatized person talk about their experiences, it comes out all over the place, doesn't it? Makes it so much harder to understand what people are going through.
Well, it is very difficult because this whole thing is all the conspiracies that conspiracy theorists talk about. They're all related in the end. They all tie together, and even the false flag events. I'm sure you're familiar with, and the 9/11, and all of these things, the Illuminati, all of these things. They all tie together. Ultimately with alien contact. And so it quickly becomes such a vast conspiracy that takes in so many fields of knowledge and so many different groups of people that it becomes almost too big for us to get our heads around. Even though it's taking place right in front of our eyes many times, we can't see it for what it is. Chemtrails are included in that as well. There's nothing good about chemtrails. They're all to our disadvantage. And yet, there they are. I've seen them dozens of times myself. There's no denying that chemtrails exist, unless you're just living with your head in the sand. But the fact that they do exist, and the chemtrails they're worse than people imagine, because one of the things that they're doing, in addition to all the ones which are more relatively well known, they are inserting modified insect DNA into the components of chemtrails. We breathe it in because it all eventually comes down into the air we breathe, of course. We breathe these in, and this DNA has been modified in such a way that it can combine with our own DNA. People have actually had insects hatch under their skin, and that is a result of chemtrails. And it is difficult to imagine any American president or any American general officer who would order or allow such a thing to take place if they were in control. But they're not.
We just did a chemtrail protest on Sunday, actually. And I think we had a couple of new people there, right, who didn't actually know anything about them. They were just kind of like walking by, and they decided to join our protest. And I said, well, it's kind of difficult to explain it to you. All right, so there's like various levels of understanding of what they are. Like first level is, okay, it's something coming out of the back of planes. Second level of is aluminium, barium, and strontium. Next level, then you're getting into nanotechnology. And the level after that, you're talking about DNA manipulation. And the level after that, you're talking about weather modification and using the chaff to spread scalar weapon waves and things of that nature. And you're talking about like a multifaceted agenda that
That's
you can
right.
only see one effect from.
There are
right?
many,
it's the only thing you can see.
Many purposes to chemtrails, and I'm sure I don't know all of them, but they are all of the things that you said and more. They spread Morgellons disease, which is a very terrible affliction, and if you ever, I think you can go on YouTube and find clips where people have taken these strands of fibers out of their skin from Morgellons disease, and they're alive. If they bring their hand close to these fibers, they try to attack their fingers and attach to them. They're like little living, wriggling organisms.
Well, Ty, what I theorized about that is if you've got these nanofibers that recycle themselves and manufacture themselves inside your body, I thought that they were like growing along the nervous system, right? So at some point you could send an electronic wave through the air, and it would affect the entire nervous system of everybody who's actually got these nanoparticles within their body, and they would just go and turn into a robot essentially. But
that's possible. I know that they're doing that with what they call smart dust. If you're familiar with smart dust, it's just it's like soot. It's like little tiny black particles that you can't even see in the air. But they've spread it worldwide through the chemtrails. There's 100% of the human population has already inhaled this smart dust. There's no escaping it now. It's in your lungs to stay. And it's said that they can utilize this, they can activate it from a satellite system, let's say, and it will do just as you were saying. It will give them control of what would then be effectively a zombie army.
It's really freaky out there, but there's also a number of cults that are starting up or have started up over the years that are trying to tell people that the alien agenda is all nice and friendly and fluffy and they're going to do all these nice things for you and help you wake up and blah, 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 blah. And you don't think that way, though, on the other hand, do you?
Well, it simply can't be that way. It doesn't take a whole lot of research into alien contact to understand clearly that some of these aliens, not all of them, but some of them are quite hostile towards us. Some of them are intrusive and invasive. Some of them eat people. There's nothing friendly about that. I don't know what those people are really thinking of who think all aliens are here to be our friends. There's nothing friendly about an abduction experience. If they come into my room at 3 o'clock in the morning walking through my walls, and they don't have stilettos and mascara on, they're not a friendly visitor. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's
some kind of abduction. Some kind of intergalactic booty call. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, it doesn't happen. That's right. And the abductions themselves are terrifying. They're intrusive. They're painful. The Greys don't care at all. And the military doesn't either, of course. But the Greys don't have any emotions like sympathy or kindness or mercy or compassion. They're like ants.
They're androgynous. Androids.
Yes, they don't have any method of reproducing naturally at all. They have to be cloned. They are a manufactured organism. They are grown. I understand they're grown underground in vats. And I'm sure that our military has their own supply of Greys by now. I've seen them at least twice in the company of the military, under the orders of the military during abduction events.
So what's your take on the people who are talking about Pleiadians and spiritual transformation, things like that?
Well, there are friendly races which exist. As we would expect, you know, the galaxy is a big place. There's room for a lot of different things out there, and we would expect that we would find friends and foes and races which don't care about us or are incompatible with us. And therefore have no interest. And that seems to be the case. The Pleiadians are generally considered to be a friendly race, as are some others, but all the talk about the spiritual transformation, it doesn't take too hard of a look around us to see that no such transformation is taking place. There's just as much hatred and criminality in the world as there's ever been, perhaps more. We are not on the verge of ascending to some higher spiritual dimension. That is propaganda. Most of it is probably propaganda invented by a 15-year-old from his mom's basement, because apparently the Pleiadians have traveled here across the stars and through dimensions and forgotten to bring a bullhorn or a radio or even some leaflets to drop. And their best method of communicating with us is through discussion groups where 15-year-olds can write their words for them and give their message. They're mentally retarded. They're like the short bus of aliens, because if you need to communicate to 9 billion people, you don't do it one at a time through a Facebook discussion group.
And some guys, I was talking about this, and we were like, okay, theoretically, there are positive aliens out there who do want to help us. Now, when you go up to a really immature child who has a penchant for violence and danger and things like that, is the first thing you do hand him advanced dangerous technology?
Well,
no?
I don't think so.
The first thing you do try to freaking train him out of everything he normally knows and does very, very slowly so that they can be introduced to all the new advanced stuff?
Well, they're not training us at all, because they're reaching only their message that we commonly hear of these. The only way we hear about it is in news groups and discussion groups. They have it broadcast. I mean, don't tell me they don't have radio technology if they could get here. They could easily take over our transmissions and give a worldwide message. But apparently they are either prevented from doing so because they are not in control here and the hostiles are, and that's the way it seems to me, or they are unwilling to do so for some reason. because obviously this change that they talk about is not taking place. The events that they predict will happen don't come to pass. Anyone who thinks that we have 10 invisible strands of DNA that we'll only see when we metamorphose to a higher spiritual plane is retarded. I mean, don't even tell me that. I've been around too long. There's no 10 invisible strands of DNA, and there's no blue avians.
Speaking of which, talking about the terror of the situation, right? I don't understand why people think that there's a mechanism for pleasure and ease of your life leading to something better. If anything, it's been pain and difficulty through life that leads to something better, right? So I think it's more like if you want to run a cult that will indoctrinate people who are lazy, don't think, don't really have any grasp on reality that's too strong, tell them everything that they want to hear, right? You'll have more than a big enough audience.
They want someone to come in and save them. And they're, I consider them to, and a lot of people don't like to hear this because they are emotionally attached to their vision of their wonderful vision of sugar plums and fairies dancing through the sky, but it's not true. They're like children splashing around in the shallow end of the pool, and they're going to stay there for the rest of their lives because they won't listen to people that know what they're talking about and try to talk sense to them. These wonderful changes, where are they? There's no one has ever been able to demonstrate to me a single thing Pleiadians have done to help us on a global scale. Nothing.
Well, I mean,
Fukushima's killing our oceans. No one's helping us with that.
Well, I've seen some people go from complete obscurity to now having a huge fan club and a base and all these people and everything around helping them. And I'm thinking, man, there must be some help going on there, but I don't think it's extraplanetary. I think it's fucking CIA.
Or it could, yeah, well, sure, because a lot of these new wave, or new age, I should say, a lot of these new age books and publications are written by the intelligence agencies. And then they'll put a name on them like Star Fairy Moonbeam, and they'll publish it, you know, and it's propaganda. They love nothing better than people to be involved in the New Age thought, because when they are completely led down a dead-end path to nowhere, and they will spend their lives clapping each other on the back, telling each other how smart and wise they are, saying namaste every 30 seconds, and they'll never come close to threatening any of the secrets that they really want to keep. It's a perfect psychological warfare ploy, as is the flat earth theory. It's just a way to get people to waste their time and energy. The only things you have that you can never replace, time and energy. You waste them, they're gone for good. And they convince these people, and they recruit others to their belief. I mean, good Lord, how are those flat earth people trying to convert people to their way of thinking? But it's not true. It's just psychological warfare.
Yep. But fortunately, though, there are flat earthers all over the globe. Now,
I wonder what kind of gravity might be holding him down, since there's no center of gravity to a flat earth.
Well, they believe that it's electric.
The moon is round and everything else is round and rotates. I can't figure.
Apparently, everything that you can see with a telescope is NASA.
Apparently so.
It's just, like, I'm looking at the moon, it's round, it's round. Oh, it's NASA that put it up there, bro. Oh my God. You have to laugh about it, because otherwise you'd go freaking nuts.
That's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to me as a human that we have people that are so ignorant they would think things like that. I mean, we all know better. Come on. The earth isn't flat. It's not even possible. It doesn't make sense at all. But to them it does. It's a reflection on how great the degree of mind control has become over people and how effective those psychological warfare programs really are.
And what's interesting is it works two ways as well, because in the one way you're capable of sucking people in who don't do critical thinking, and on the other way you're capable of driving people who do critical thinking fucking insane listening to this shit.
Yeah, and it wastes our time. I mean, in my job, it's incredible how much time is wasted by people that are, they're completely delusional. I mean, I don't want to hear that you're Pleiadian ambassador, people. You better have some ID printed on unobtainium if you want me to believe that, because to me, I can't imagine, first of all, that they would ever choose you to be an ambassador when they could take Stephen Hawking, for instance. But instead, it's these people that are the most unlikely seeming people you could imagine, you know, and they are, there's no reason to think that they're speaking the truth. They're most likely just desperate for attention. And there's a lot of people who claim to be channeling the friendly grays. They were channeling the friendly grays and the Bigfoot. He has a message of love and peace for us. Bullshit. It's not true. I'm from Bigfoot country. Don't tell me about Bigfoot. I'll tell you about Bigfoot. Roger Patterson's from my hometown. Bigfoot wanders through the forest naked. He doesn't use technology. He's not a space alien. And these people that claim to be channeling grays, friendly grays, they are con artists. They are con artists. They're trying to take advantage of people who are good enough to trust them and take them at their word to sell huge quantities of books. And they usually do get rich from it. But it's not true. None of it's ever been true.
Well, that is problematic as well, because when you're talking about the amount of disinformation that's actually out there about alien phenomena and that kind of thing, you leave people feeling confused. And indeed, that's why that's what the Operation Secret Services, the OSS, during World War II was actually created to produce confusion. So
they're very good at it, aren't they?
Yeah, so during World War II, the Nazis had no idea where their communications were coming from. The OSS hijacked a train that was full of mail, put their own letters on the train addressed to these same Nazi officials, and then just put the train back on the track so that they're going in, and they're like, we can't trust our own officials, we can't trust each other, and it makes communication between people, especially open, honest communication between people within those kind of paradigms, almost impossible. And then you've got your enemy who comes in almost unresisted by comparison to what would happen if they didn't start a propaganda campaign against their enemies before attacking them. And now, do you feel that that's what we're being softened up for worldwide, you know?
I do think so. And they're recruiting a lot of people into becoming they're recruiting people to subconsciously to assist them in the sense that they are motivated to recruit people into the flat earth movement or the new age Pleiadian friendly alien movement. And in effect, they are working against us. They are working for the wrong side without ever realizing it. And those people who come forth honestly, they're quite brave, I think, to do so. They are risking their lives literally to step forward into the light and tell their stories. But as a result of all the con artists and all the misinformation, which is the disinformation campaign is multi-level, multi-layered. You penetrate one layer, all you get to is another layer of disinformation. They've done an extremely thorough job. And because of all these things combined, and the media has trained the public to roll their eyes and dismiss anyone who says that they're, for instance, an alien abductee, to not believe them. It makes it very hard for serious, honest people who are just trying to tell a strange experience that happened to them as best they can to ever be taken seriously or to ever get any exposure, because they all tend to be grouped in the same group of conspiracy nuts, which, by the way, is a term that was invented by the CIA and spread to the press in order to discredit people who are getting too close to the real conspiracies.
Technically, they didn't invent the term conspiracy theorist. They were responsible for popularizing the term as for conspiracy theorists to discredit those who were questioning the Warren Commission that was trying to tell everybody that it was a lone gunman that shot JFK, that penetrated his body 7 times with a single round.
Right, and anyone that would believe that is they don't have any sense of logic, because those things are obviously impossible. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the extended Zapruder film by now. It shows clearly that the limo driver turns around and blows Kennedy's head off from the front seat. You can't really get an entry wound in the forehead when a bullet is fired from behind you.
Well, one can only hope. Now, we're going to go off planet now, like literally here. And we're talking about the man-eating reptilian conglomerate, and you told me that they're in control of Earth, orbit, and Mars. All right? And
the reptilians have been here for a long time. If you look through human history, there are records all throughout history of alien contact. There can be only alien contact. They only had a certain number of caves to draw on. They didn't just waste it with graffiti. They put the most important messages that they wanted to pass on to the future on those walls, because they only had a certain number of them. And there are many, many instances of what are clearly aliens being drawn there, and clearly alien interference in our governments throughout history. And the reptilians have been here for many thousands of years. They may have been here the whole time that we've been here. And they have no intention of leaving. They do control the planet Mars. I'm told that the tall whites control the moon. This is why there are no public expeditions to either of those places, and there never will be, according to my information, in our lifetime, because they simply can't take the risk that some photos or films will come through which haven't been sterilized and sanitized, and they'll blow the cover off the whole thing. So we've got bases on both the moon and Mars, and we have had for many years, many decades, and we are allowed to have them at the permission of the aliens as long as we stay out of their way and don't bother them. But those bases are part of the secret space program, which does not necessarily work for us at all. It's a completely separate civilization in a way. It's a breakaway civilization. In some cases, there are groups of humans who have made their own agreements with the aliens, notwithstanding any that governments may have made. They've made their own agreements, secret military groups that may have their own treaty that allows them to do things, and they don't care about us except as a source of funding for their programs. We don't get any of the benefits from these programs at all, but we're paying for all of them. The system of underground roads and tunnels and bases and subways, which runs throughout the United States and probably beyond its borders, the estimated cost of that is $12 trillion plus. That's almost the entire size of our national debt. And they have absolutely no intention of letting any of us into those places. They're stocked with weapons, food, hydroponic plants, huge growing areas for food. They recycle all the air and water. They've got tanks. They've got artillery. They've got 25-ton blast doors like they use at NORAD headquarters, sealing the entrance to these places. They are prepared to live under there for hundreds of years, if necessary, without coming out. Somebody very powerful thinks that the surface world is going to become uninhabitable and that they are going to have to retreat underground. And when they do, they have no intention of letting us in. Our Department of Homeland Security, over the last 3 or 4 years, has purchased over 2 billion rounds of hollow point ammo and shotgun slugs. You don't use those things for practice, ever, because they cost too much. 2 billion rounds. The Department of Homeland Security, have they ever even fired a shot in anger? I haven't heard about it. 2 billion rounds. Who are they going to spend 2 billion rounds shooting? The only answer is us.
I always found it would be quite an ironic plan. Hey, you know, it'd be a really good idea when the Earth is really screwed up. What? Going underground. And deep military bases with the world's worst pedophiles, rapists, and murderers, and child traffickers, and drug runners, and gun runners that the world's ever fucking seen. That would sound like a brilliant idea.
That's what's going to be under there. They've got technology under they don't build these with civilian technology. They've got technology that's far ahead of us. They don't use telephones. They use hologram phones like Help Me, Obi-Wan, that kind of a thing. And they've got the subway under there, which is a magnetic levitation subway. They're so expensive to build that only Tokyo and the whole world has one for civilian use. It's capable of traveling at least Mach 3. You can get on one of those subways in Los Angeles, and before you're done watching the first version of Star Wars, you'll be in Washington, D.C. And that is some extremely high technology, and it's something that we could certainly get a lot of use out of in the civilian world if they would release it to us. We could have rebuilt our whole infrastructure here for far less than the cost of this underground system of bases and railways.
Well, the goal here seems to be to make humans devolve, essentially. I don't see any of us getting, you know, smarter and way up there and getting better and better. I see us all getting dumber, slower, weaker, sicker, that kind of thing. And it seems to me like I don't know. If there was an enemy force involved here, this would be what happens during a siege, essentially. Yeah. Yeah. This is what you do to wear down your enemy.
They're not going to pull apart our cities with laser blasters because that's wasteful. And it's not necessary. They're, as you say, they're dumbing us down intentionally. Everything that we're taught in school, we take it to be the truth, but really almost none of it is the truth. It's a tapestry of lies which are carefully woven together to form a simulation of reality which we take to be the truth. But nothing works the way we think it does. The truth is always hidden underneath, and it's very different than what we believe. The aliens don't have any need to invade us with a military force, for instance. It's not going to be like War of the Worlds. They don't have to. The reptilians are very patient beings. They've existed for many hundreds of millions of years with high technology. They don't know what rushing means. They don't have to be in a hurry. And so what they are doing now is some of these alien races, including the Greys and the reptilians, are creating hybrids with human abductees. And they are using our young, vital, strong, diverse DNA to mix with their own. And then when they produce a hybrid, they have a creature which is half alien and half perfectly adapted to Earth. And then they simply insert them. Many of them look just like us. You can't tell them apart. And they insert them into the population to live, work with us, ride the bus to work with us, breed with us, marry us, and eventually pass their genetics on to the next generation. And if you have enough hybrids and enough patience, you can change the entire genetic footprint of humanity into something which is not human as we know it. And they seem to be working towards that, and also including bionics in this too, the transhumanism. They seem to have that as a goal in mind, something which is a combination of all three of those things. It is a way to conquer a planet without firing a shot, in a way.
Yeah, and that's what you'd do. In fact, I was watching a video the other day and said that if aliens did invade us, what would it really look like? And the guys were just saying you wouldn't see it happen. You'd be dead.
There's not going to be an alien invasion because it's already happened.
Yeah, exactly. And what they were talking about is when you're talking about alien technology and things like that, like things like scalar waves, for example, where you could literally wipe out the entirety of the planet, make everybody's heart just stop beating within 12 seconds, all right, by firing one scalar pulse planet-wide and reflected over the horizon radar. Boom, everybody dead. It's going to be that quick, that easy, if we were up against a technologically advanced alien race that actually wanted to kill us.
If they wanted to kill us, it would be very easy.
Yeah.
And
what do they want with us? Drop a big enough rock
from orbit and they'd wipe us out.
What do they want with us? I mean, if they're so advanced and they've got such contempt for us, why keep us alive? And I thought about this before the show. I was like, if I came across a creature that had some kind of industrial use to me and I was way smarter than them and had way better technology, I'd farm them.
Well, that's what they're doing, isn't it? We are a DNA farm, and we are considered by the reptilians and perhaps others as well to just be livestock on the hoof. Reptilians have an average IQ of 200. That's twice what we are. If reptilians had mini marts and people working graveyard shifts in them, the person working there at the graveyard shift would have 45 IQ points over Einstein. That's how smart we're talking about. Yes, we are a DNA farm. The reptilians value DNA highly. It is a currency to them. It's a source of currency. And these races need to occasionally hybridize with others in order to keep themselves from becoming extinct ultimately, because DNA, as it turns out, their medical science has shown very clearly that DNA has a timer built into it. And at some point, that timer is going to expire. When it does, the DNA has basically become worn out. It's lost its elasticity. It's lost its variability, let's say. So with human beings, it would be, for instance, when we all have interbred so long that there's only one race left, and it's kind of a mishmash of all the races we used to have, then that's the kind of thing that happens. When the timer goes off, it becomes progressively more difficult to reproduce naturally. And eventually, it becomes impossible, and you have to resort to cloning. cloning is an imperfect science. With every generation that's cloned, you lose a little bit of information from the previous generation through mutations. You might clone someone with a mutated cell, from a mutated cell, or you might lose a slight amount of the information through the process of cloning. And eventually, as the generations go by, these clones become less and less efficient. They live shorter lives. And eventually, it becomes impossible, apparently, to even reproduce by cloning. And at that point, the species will become extinct, unless they can find a way to hybridize themselves with another intelligent race, in which case the DNA timer will be reset to zero. And that's what's going on right here.
Is it kind of like humans keep claiming that we want to merge with machines, and the aliens actually want to merge with us? It's kind of like Ghost in the Shell, genetic style, right?
Sure, because as it turns out, we are the dumbest, least advanced, so-called intelligent race known to any of them. We are the basic, format of intelligent life, let's say. So their DNA is infinitely more complex than ours, I would presume. But because our DNA is comparatively so simple and so basic compared to theirs, it makes us much easier to work with in terms of creating hybrids, because we have less DNA to be bothered with. So when it comes to creating a hybrid between them and us, they want the simplest DNA they can find. And our DNA is young, it's strong, it's warlike, it's aggressive. We've got tremendous versatility and variability throughout the human population. And to them, that's just what they're looking for, because it's not easy even for these incredibly advanced races to create hybrids. That's a tough call. I mean, we are 98% of the same genetics as a monkey, as a chimpanzee, but that 2% makes a lot of difference. So our DNA is not unique. It is almost certainly of alien origin itself. And that's why so many of these aliens look so much like humans. They don't look like us. We look like them, because our genetics, in part, came from them originally. And that's why so many aliens look so much like humans.
Yeah, we were created in their image.
Yes. And the story of creation in Genesis, by the way, is a simplified template for terraforming a planet. You start out with the oceans, life in the oceans, put plants on the land, and you work your way up. And it's basically a template for terraforming a planet. And our planet right now is being terraformed by our military and by the aliens to the specs of the reptilians. It is becoming darker, it's becoming hotter, the oxygen content is going down, the methane and radiation content is going up. These chemtrails are playing a big part in this. We've got methane leaks. We've got thousands of them in the Americas that aren't even capped. They just let them keep leaking because we are being terraformed even as we speak.
Mm. And that's what all the terrorism is about, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, well, last thing we wanted to talk about here was how NASA was designed as a public propaganda tool to make sure people never figure out what's going on in space, and who also funnel some of their budget into our nice secret space program, which they don't want anybody really finding out about. And we're also in the biggest global disinformation campaign to ever occur surrounding this whole alien phenomenon. And we better hope that disclosure never happens, because the truth about alien contact is very frightening, because we're ants in an ant farm.
That's right. The more you learn about alien contact, the scarier it gets, and the less power we have, and the more you realize it, because we are surrounded by a multitude of different alien civilizations, any one of which could destroy us at will. All they've got to do is drop a big rock on our heads and we're toast, if you think about it. And of course, that they're not by any means limited to that option. But NASA itself has always had the purpose of putting on the front the appearance of being a civilization or a civilian-run space exploration group, which explores space and tells us what it finds there. It's never been that in fact.
Mm. All right, Derek, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Derek Tyler is his name. If you are interested to read about his abduction cases and, of course, other things, you can read his book. It's Alien Contact, The Difficult Truth on Amazon. That's Alien Contact, The Difficult Truth by Derek Tyler. Thank you very much for coming on with me today. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for supporting me on Patreon for $1 a month. Or go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate today. Because let's face it here, we just want to be open. We just want to be honest. And it's difficult to sell products while you're doing that. That's why we get supported by the community. That's you. Thank you very much. See you after the break.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology. They have all these great things that they're going to do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Provide us for free education?
Well, that's obviously effective, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does.
Well, they never censor, hang up, or cut off their guests.
Well, that's no fun, is it?
Well, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shows and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgotten.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. So wake me up when it's all over, when I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was hurting myself and I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you.
Levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's already over before you know it. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. My very special guest right now is Sean Gautreaux, which kind of rhymes with GoPro, bro. Sean, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Benny, for having me on.
Now, we had Randy Moggins on last week, who you recommended you. So, first thing, let's start off with a few of the things you've seen regarding UFOs and things of that nature. I believe the first thing you saw was in 1993, nice big orange fireball.
Yeah, that was a trip. Let me get give a shout out to Randy Moggins for mentioning me, for sure. He's a great guy. I'm 100% behind him. But yeah, I wasn't really into this stuff, until the last 6 years. I mean, I remember as a kid watching Unsolved Mysteries and shows like that and hearing about Roswell and whatnot, but I've seen some things over the years that kind of factor in now. And actually the first one I saw was in, it was about, 1990. And that was a figure, I don't know how to really describe it, but it seemed like an interdimensional figure that a friend of mine and I had an apartment at LSU on the edge of a forest, and this thing would come up and knock on the door and rattle the handle, and we'd see shadows and would go there, and there was nothing there. And finally one day I saw it, one night, and I was turning to go back in, and there was this figure standing there, and I'd say it was about 5 feet tall. I won't say a gray, but I'll say it was a dark gray figure with no features, no eyes, no nothing, just almost like an outline, but reflecting some kind of light. And when I saw it, it stopped, and it realized I saw it and stepped down to its left and asked my friend to go get a weapon because I didn't know what to think of this thing. Finally, I saw it, walked up to it, and there was nothing there. I didn't think much about that until recently when people started telling me, Sean, these things are interdimensional, and that kind of ties in. And then in 93, I did see an orange fireball. I was traveling with a friend to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina for a bachelor party. And this thing came streaming down the median on the highway. And not only could you see it reflecting off of the back windshields and the cars in front of us because it came from behind us, but people kind of tapped on their brakes. And they're also thinking, well, what was that? Wait, hold on. What's going on? And it was just like less than 2 seconds. So that, and then, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here, but in Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, which hit New Orleans in 2005, was something I evacuated for with my cousin, my sister, and my mom. And we were literally on that Sunday running from the edge of the storm. And we had gotten out of the car to pick up supplies. It was like something out of a movie. People rushing in there and just buying whatever they could. It was mayhem. But I turned around before I got into the store, and I could see the leading edge of the storm, and there were what seemed like fingers coming over the top. And I could describe it as like dark fingernails with a finger behind it, like four or five of them. And that's really what it looked like. It was a hand coming over. And I didn't think about that too much until now I realize more of what's going on. And then that factors in as well.
What did you think about that? Because you said you got into this about maybe 6 years ago in New Orleans.
It started with us having a drought here in the area. And I'm, you know, very close to a lake, and I'm also very close to the Gulf of Mexico. And we're having a tropical storm coming in right now, which is an absolute joke. I mean, it's just a little bit of rain and wind. But the typical pattern in New Orleans in the summer is for the flow to come up from the Gulf and cool us off at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And sometimes it turns us into a sauna, but that's just the way it has been. But in the summer of 2011, we weren't getting that rain. And I wanted to know why. I mean, the grass was literally dry, and we had to put out the sprinkler and everything. So I started looking into the possibility of weather control. So I started looking at radar images. And I could see the storms coming in from the Gulf, and about 15 miles south of here, they'd just stop like an invisible barrier where the storms would come in, and it would just hit this line, and all their energy would just be dumped at one spot. And I said, well, that's not normal. Let me look into this a little bit more and see where it goes. After that, I set up little cameras, and I would take long-term videos of the sky to the south, just to try to figure it out, where are we going with all this kind of stuff. And, yeah, it really seemed like weather control, almost like there was a giant saw, like a circular saw over in New Orleans, just chopping up these storms on a daily basis. And I'd see cumulus clouds come in that would normally reach here, but they were getting shredded. Just within 7 minutes, they were gone. Whew. So again, that wasn't normal. So that's really all where it started, and it just led into something else.
So when you started actually getting out the cameras and your recording equipment and that kind of thing, that's when things sort of changed for you, eh?
Very much so, because I was able to take those videos into the computer and speed them up. And instead of sitting there for 15 minutes, I could speed them up and see the whole process within 1 minute. And it just visually made a lot more sense. I could see the things being exploded. I could see shapes in there that didn't make a lot of sense, angular objects, and that led me to something else, is essentially what we're going to talk about tonight. And then I was thinking, okay, this has got to be weather control, and how do they do it? And I could tell by the different colors in the sky. I could see a natural white cloud. I could see a silvery fog or cloud as well. And there was also ones that were like a dirty yellow, amber, rusty color. And I said, well, that's not moisture. It's got to be something else. And I also started downloading satellite photographs from USGS NASA to see if I could find something in there that would help me understand it. And that's when really things started heating up. And in the videos, I could tell that, again, these angular objects within the clouds, not natural fluffy clouds that would just float along the sky, something was in there creating the cloud. And that really got my attention.
Well, what do you think? What did you find?
I set up cameras a lot, and I still do here and there. But it was really, I'll tell you what. August 1st, I'd mentioned the USGS NASA satellite photographs, and they were very high res, 7,000 by 7,000 pixels approximately. And not only would I get the visual layer, they also offered a thermal layer. So it was a thermal picture of South Louisiana. And when I started looking at those again, I was seeing the angular objects, and in the thermal they appear cold, like a cloud is supposed to be cold, but there were triangles. And I'm like, no, because I measured it out, and they're like, these are way too big. seeing some, I don't know what it is. Let me put this aside and really just kind of study it from the ground. And, I tucked them away. So I, got a lot of video, got it into my computer. I developed two infrared cameras that would also record, which really helped, cause it would make things a lot clearer. And, on August 8th, 2011, I set up a camera on the back patio, and there was, it really honestly looked like that silvery gray type of cloud that I was talking about, like a sheet coming across the sky. And I could see anomalies in there, something just popping in and out of it. So I set up the camera, turned away, lit up a cigarette, typical me. And, within 30 seconds, I turned around and looked up, and there's this black triangle sitting up there, almost right in the center of the camera. I'm thinking, all right, what is this? It was like half transparent, half opaque, whatever way you look at it. It was casting a shadow on the cloud closer to me. So I could see the object. I could see the cast shadow. And it sat up there for about 4 or 5 minutes. And I remember telling myself earlier, you know, in the days prior, I'm like, if you guys show up, I said, you bastards, if you show up in the right light, I'm going to find you. And that's what I said, and it still sat there. And then after a few minutes, it disappeared, but I had it all on video. I'm like, oh, here we go. So the next day was actually my birthday, and I invited over. I picked three friends to kind of bounce ideas off, and they came over the next day, two of them who were local. And I bounced it off of them, and they didn't know what to think. It was just totally weird. They're like, you're onto something, but I don't know what it is, and I didn't either. So that's really what got me hooked in the beginning.
And at that time, there was nothing else on YouTube or whatever that could kind of corroborate or talking about the same thing sort of thing.
No. I looked everywhere because I thought I was losing my mind. But I know what I was seeing. I know what I was recording, these angular objects up there. So I illustrate children's books, and that year – coming up to Christmas, I had a lot of books to do. I had three of them that were due way before Christmas. Once I got done with that, I was able to go through the video that I recorded in those months, because I'd come in here and work on a book, and I'd go outside and, you know, just set the camera out for 30 minutes. And then once I started going through it, it was just piling up and piling up and piling up. And really, that's what happens with this thing. You can see one photo or 10 photos of these objects, and it may not make a lot of sense or really click. But after you see 100 of them or 1,000, it's like, boom, I get it. It's like the eye-brain connection. So I'm like, well, you know, I've got some money set aside, and I can take some time off, and I'm going to run with this and just see where it goes. So I started studying military technologies, because initially I thought, this has got to be military. It's something about military weather manipulation. I wasn't really into the whole alien thing. So in the first 9 parts of the series, I really focused on that, and I'm glad I did. I mean, I went through it, and I understood that, yes, they do have cloaking. There's plenty of examples out there of it. And on June 2nd, 2012, I released the first 9 parts, thinking, oh, here we go. We'll see what happens. But it was then where I was able to connect with other people who've been doing this a lot longer than I have. So over the years, we've kind of put together a network and gotten people around the world who have been doing this and didn't know what to think, same kind of thing. And we've all kind of come together and traded notes and realized these guys are and gals are helping me, you know, get my sanity back. So that was kind of a milestone right there.
Now, even basic military – well, I wouldn't say basic, but military technology is now experimenting in cloaking, and this is the stuff that they admit that they can do. Right. So it's not too far beyond the imagination to say that there's actually cloaked aircraft flying above us right now.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in grad school in 96, I was taking computer graphics classes, and there were stories coming across the wire about the Japanese students making cloaks. And literally they put on a cloak from their shoulders to their waist, and you could pretty much see right through them. And I'm thinking, if Japanese students are doing this at this point in 1996, what does the military have? And that's just where my mind went. And there are videos online. You can look them up, and hopefully a lot of people have seen these, but there's a so-called insurgent video in the Middle East of an American soldier in some kind of cloaked uniform. And you can see like a ghost figure kind of walk across or run across a wall. But when he gets in front of the Abrams tank, you can really pick him out at that point. And he climbs into the top hatch. That's been out there for years. And also the British MOD has released a video of a tank that has like infrared panels on the side. And that allows that tank to not only blend into the background environment and cloak itself, but it can project an image on the side that would make it look like it's a car, a lot smaller. So when you think about that, I think, well, do you think any general or military industrial complex guy just thought, let's put this on a blimp, an anti-gravity craft, something filled with helium, and there's a bunch of ways of doing cloaking. And put it over for surveillance, either, you know, domestic territory or a hostile territory. And I think, yeah, there's a pretty much 100% chance it's been done. And I did photograph some things to where I could distinguish between two types of shapes and two flight patterns. And especially going back to December 2011, I could see that there was like a shovel-shaped craft that would fly nose up. And there was another type of craft that was similar, but it would fly horizontally, just like a regular airplane, but would hover. And there were two giant boons on the back, vertical stabilizers, that really gave this type away. And so I focused on that, and I'm like, are these the same things? Are they not? And then that month, when I was building 3D models of these objects, my friend, I'll call her Nancy, one of the first three people that I tried to bounce ideas off who came over on my birthday, she gives me a call and she says, Sean, I didn't really get what you were saying, but I saw the craft rise up into the clouds. I'm like, where are you? And she told me where she was, about 50 miles south. And I said, did you get a picture? No, but I know what it looks like. It's silver. I saw the rivets and I saw everything. And it started out like a flattened sphere. And it tilted up to like a 45-degree angle. And the more it got into the clouds, the more it formed. So I said, listen, when you got time, come over and tell me what you saw. So she came into the kitchen. I gave her a piece of paper. I said, well, what did it look like? And she took her two fingers and she drew a V shape. I said, well, what's that? She goes, those are the beams on the bottom. I said, bingo, that's it. Because the last details I'll put into the 3D model were these two giant beams on the bottom that went from the tip of the aircraft to the back of the aircraft. So I showed her the 3D model on my computer. She's like, yeah, that's close. It's pretty close, but not exact. And then years later, somebody sent me a picture of the DARPA Blackswift craft. And I said, I wonder if this is it. And I sent it to her, and she wrote back immediately, that's it. That's exactly it. So that's the military, at least one of them, military version of a cloaked hovering craft, but these other ones seem a little bit different in the way they fly, the way they appear.
And if they're not military, what did you think they were?
Well, not military, then you start thinking alien. And I did a lot of research, and there was talk of alien invasion. There was also talk of Project Bluebeam, which is a fake alien invasion. I was thinking, is that what they're trying to pull off? Is this whole thing like a hologram? I just don't know. It's just going to take some time to look into it and trade notes and bounce ideas and see what comes out of it. And then eventually, I mean, here I am 6 years later, and there has been no invasion that I know of from these things. So,
well, in that case, the invasion's probably over.
yeah, probably a long time ago. We just don't know it. But yeah, I'm starting to think these may be of a different breed completely and may have been here the whole time.
What do you mean, like non-human and non-alien?
Yeah. I mean, that's a third option. And a friend of mine kind of started dragging me in this direction. What if it's not human? What if it's not alien? What if it's been here the whole time? And over the years, I've gone back to Ansel Adams' photographs and to see if the clouds exhibited this kind of formation. And they do, but not the way they do now. Because the clouds I saw as a kid, and a lot of us can say the same thing for themselves, because they don't look the same. They're not fluffy and billowing. They look electrified and spastic and just ripped apart in a way. So I think they're being exposed for whatever reason, and we can, you know, maybe talk about chemtrails or pollution and different things like that, but it's happening, and if people look up, they're going to see it, and they're going to recognize it for whatever it is. They're being exposed. They're exposing themselves. It's the gods coming out of the clouds. I have no idea at this point. So it's really open, and people ask me all the time, what are they? And I tell them, I don't know. But my job is not to give you the answer for that. My job is to show you what to look for. So that's really been my job over the last 6 years, is collecting people who think they're going nuts, and then they see my work, and they come into my groups, and they say, thank God you've done this. So that's kind of the reward. You know?
Yeah, well, it's the same thing that I try to do with my show. You know, it's like, Vinny, why do you do your show if not too many people listen to it? And I go, well, because there's one person listening who is so on the same level as the guest that I'm interviewing. And then when that person tells me about their wake-up story, it'll affect the listener and it'll help them to change their own life and help them to have the confidence to quit their job and start doing something to expose scumbaggery or to improve the world, rather than continuing to listen to a talk radio show host like me, right? That's the idea. And I think that if we all play our part in such a way, that we actually can create a positive future, because we create a positive present, and it simply goes on from that. But, yeah, I might be wrong. Maybe it's just a waste of time. But there is a lot of people that are still alive today because they've been on my show at a time when they were at great points of weakness and were thinking about giving up what they're doing with their lives or killing themselves. So, yeah, it has an effect. Whether or not it affects everybody doesn't matter to me, as long as it affects somebody in a positive way. Now, let's see about this. We're talking about these old photographs from, what was it, Ansel Adams you're talking about.
Yeah.
And saying that this, and from those looking at them, you reckon this phenomenon was occurring back in the early 20th century, right?
Yeah, the whole point was to try to reach back and see how long has this been going on. And if we can connect it to the military-industrial complex only, then, hey, there's a pretty good possibility that it's all military. Uh-oh. 1800s, early 1900s, and they do exhibit the same kind of thing, just not as sharp. It's like the kind of clouds that I would see as a kid. I was an artist. I drew clouds. I knew what they looked like. I had to. And they're fluffy and billowing, and now they're not. Something's changing, and this could really lead to the militarization, electrification of the atmosphere by the military that is affecting the clouds this way in showing them up inadvertently, maybe, or maybe not. It's just, again, it's up in the air. But I guess going back and trying to find the history of it and looking for symbols as well, because once you kind of break down these craft, you know they're triangular. Some are pyramids. There's different shapes. There's one that looks like a submarine. There's spheres up there. And trying to go back and see what connections can I make pre-1945, pre-1900 or whatever. And does that say UFO? Does that say interdimensional beings? It's hard to say, but it's starting to lead to, yeah, pre-military industrial complex. And my friend Jim Kerr out in California has been a big help with all this. And he's got a pretty good case for fallen angels, demons. And maybe over the years, these have been seen as demons and angels and things like that. But I can't for 100% say that's the case. Do I believe in those kind of things? Yeah, I certainly do. I don't have too many experiences with that myself, but I have a lot of friends that I trust in 100% that have told me very similar things about the reptilians and the greys and things like that. Is that this gang? I can't say for sure. I just can't. Not yet.
Mm. Who was the said? You said that it was something like it might just be water with memory shaping these clouds.
That's the latest thing. Like the non-human, non-alien possible intelligence that's been here the whole time. it's another option. And a friend of mine came into my life recently and said, Sean, you might want to look in this direction. And he started feeding me information. And I had purchased Trevor James Constable's book, The Cosmic Pulse of Life. And I did have briefly a chance to speak to him before he died a couple of years ago. And I hadn't gotten his book at the time, but I said, Trevor, do you know about these triangular craft that are floating around up there? He goes, oh, yeah, yeah, I do. I know all about them. So I bought his book. And when it came, I saw the cover. And on the cover of the book, it's almost exact, the kind of craft that I modeled and drew over the years to what he's got on the cover of his book. There's a lot of similarities. So I haven't had a chance to read through the whole thing, but I think he did this a long time ago in the 1950s and 1960s with infrared photography. And he put out books, a lot of information. I think he was one of the most brilliant people on this planet. But how much do you hear about him nowadays?
You know, people know about him. Never heard of him.
The guy's great. Look him up on YouTube. And then my friend I was just talking about sent me a book. I've got it right here. It's called They Live in the Sky. And when you go, it's another Trevor James Constable book. And when you go through it, having read the whole thing again, it's starting to make sense. So he did this a long time ago. And he didn't get very far. So like the people I was talking about that I connected with over the years who have been doing this for a decade or longer – haven't gotten that far. And it's only being lucky enough to get on shows like this and connect with the radio show hosts and get the information out there that the information is advancing. Slowly, now, but, yeah.
Well, what has the UFO community been saying about this then when you brought it to them?
I've been pretty much ignored, like Randy said. And, hey, I mean, what can you do? So some of them, a lot of them, most of them just never get back to me. Some of them say, oh, that's interesting. Some of them say, yeah, maybe, but I don't really see these triangle things that you're talking about. And I've listened over the years just trying to glean some kind of information from radio shows, even back to Art Bell. And you only hear snippets of it, just little bits and pieces here. And you'll hear somebody being interviewed talk about, yeah, I'm getting reports of a cloud turning into a triangle and turning back to a cloud. Or there's another one recently I heard, and the guy saw it was like three Christmas trees up in the sky that he called UFOs. I know what that was. That was them popping off and their signatures lower and expand. And it does look like a Christmas tree. I've got thousands of photographs of that. But, yeah, they pretty much just blow it off. And they all talk about disclosure. And the possibility of this cosmic disclosure and blah, blah, blah. But they're not addressing this, and this shit's right above us the whole time. Really? Really. And it's worldwide, Benny. I mean, I don't think there's anybody in New Zealand that I've come across, but certainly Australia, Russia. My first donation of $2.45 came out of Russia, just out of the blue. UK, Lithuania, the Philippines. So I guess we're trying to get to an answer and see exactly what it is, if it's beneficial, if it's not beneficial, if the alien invasion or not. Is it natural? And that's a possibility right there.
Yeah. Well, you said that there's some people who just know nothing about this, but there's also those in the military who know everything about it. But they're not sharing their information with you, are they?
No. I've never been in the military. I don't really know too many in the military to bounce this off of, and you know, I try to stay away from that. But in your listening audience, there's people who have seen this kind of thing. If they're on vacation and sitting on a beach and looking up and they notice this very sharp shadow inside a cloud, a triangular shadow, people think, well, what is that? Is it just an anomaly? Does it happen all the time? But that looks just kind of weird. There's other people that don't know anything about this and haven't heard of it. And they're going to listen to the show and probably say, oh, this is just a bunch of nonsense. But I've gotten that a lot. But I've also got people who have come back to me and said, Sean, I thought you made all this up. I thought you were full of crap. But you know what? I see them now because I've kind of followed the kind of things that you've said. And there was one guy, I think he was in Texas, I cracked up. He said, what have you done to my eyes? And I tell people when they see it, don't freak out. Just take it in slowly. And, the first couple of years, I was mindfucked. I mean, I didn't know what to think. I was all over the place. But after you get used to it and calm down, eventually it's kind of like seeing through the matrix. Because I see it daily now. When I walk out, I don't see a fluffy cloud. I see the things that are making the cloud. And I'm so used to it now. I've got 20,000 plus photographs, hundreds of hours of video, 200 plus movies on my YouTube channel, which is Industrial Surrealism. And I'm just, I mean, where do I go from here? But finally, there is possibly another option that will answer this and could be a very positive thing. I hope.
I guess that's the idea, isn't it? You have to hope
that more
information comes out, because obviously it's not forthcoming. And I don't know. It's really difficult talking about subjects like this, because obviously you're dealing from, I don't know what exactly I'm dealing with. And where do you go from there? Right? How do you go from, I have no idea what I'm dealing with, there's no evidence or official sources or anything that can corroborate it. We know there's something, but we don't know what it is. Don't know where it comes from. Don't know what it's doing. This is one of those great mysteries that just will fuck you sideways in your brain places.
Yeah, for years. And then you just eventually just calm down and accept it as it is. I mean, there is something out there. It's called, I think it's by Nick Pope. It's Project Condyne. And for what I've seen in there, there are things, there are parallels between that so-called report and what we're seeing. Interdimensional plasma-type craft or entities. But you go to that report, and the first whole paragraph is completely blacked out. All the good stuff is like, no, forget about that. Just read down to this. Maybe it connects, maybe it doesn't. But the whole thing for me has been finding people online who've just been doing this, and it's been great. So, and we continue to trade information and continue to take photographs and post them up online and say, this is the ship, this is the plume coming from it, this is how you find them. So it's a big mystery. It's kind of fun at this point. I'm kind of bored with it at the same time, because I've been doing it for so long and really haven't gotten too far. So,
yeah. And you talked about how some of them actually look like a pyramid with an all-seeing eye.
Yeah, I think there's possibly a connection with what is called the all-seeing eye. And as I said, there's a lot of different types. But for the main ones that I see are the pyramid ones in the triangular ones, because it's a lot easier to hide a sphere or some kind of oblong shape in a cloud than it is to hide something very angular. And it was finding the angles and finding the sharp edges that would lead to, you know, the better understanding and the shape of these things. So after a couple of months, I'd put a bunch of pictures online on my computer and compare. All right, this is a straight angle here. What does this lead to? Can I find it in something else? And yes, I can. And going back and forth. And after comparing, it seems like a majority of these look like triangles with like a rectangular bottom with two square ports or vents on the edges. And then when you go back to the middle, you draw a line between those two edges and you go up a little bit. It's a hole. It's an engine. It's an eye. I've seen it, a blowhole. I've seen it all different ways. And, that's like the main one. The way these things operate, it seems like there's a large one in the center of the cloud. And then there's other ones that are smaller that are attached to it and pop off. They pop off the front, pop off the top, pop off the sides, sometimes the bottoms. And then attached to those, there's smaller ones and possibly smaller ones from that. I can't make them all out, but this is basically how it works. So once they pop off, it's like the billowing cloud. It's just the way they are, just the way they operate. Mm. And when you go back to even like stained glass windows in Catholic churches, sculptures in Catholic churches, possibly even the pyramids in Egypt, possibly Horus, H-O-R-U-S, with the pyramid, the triangular shape with the eye in the middle. I'm thinking there's probably a connection here. And again, that leads back to how long has it been here? And are these the so-called gods that have been seen through the our ancestors and have recorded in some way? I don't know. Maybe so.
And Amelia continuing to keep watch on us like a scientist with a magnifying glass might study the microbes in a pool of water.
Yeah, the watchers. I've heard that term. I like that one a lot. But to me, it doesn't seem like an eye. It seems like what can be construed as an eye. But I think it was December 28, 2013. I've seen a lot of this stuff, obviously, but there was one that came over, Benny, and it looked like very organic, and it was out ahead of a larger object, and this was a smaller triangle one, and it was perfectly delineated, and that eye popped off like a blowhole in a whale, and it seemed like it put on the brakes, and it kind of stopped and slowed down, and that's just the way I saw it at that time. So I think there's a lot of blowholes, ports on these things that make them pop around and flip very slowly, but if you sit down and watch, you can make it out.
Now, you have a number of videos here that you've got on your desktop. Are you willing to show those and maybe narrate them for the radio listeners?
Sure. As I said, I've got over 200 videos. After the first 19 parts, I didn't get very specific. I went to, this is what I'm photographing, and this is what I'm seeing, and I'm going to diagram it for you, and people love this more than the other videos. So this is a photograph I took, and then I flipped the color. Instead of a blue background and a white, it's on a black foreground and an amber-colored background. See, like this one, very close to the original photograph. I can see this is an object popping out of here. Here's the back of it. And essentially, that is a triangle shape. I can see. Can you see this? Can you see my cursor?
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Here, well, that's not a terribly good one. Let's get to the next one. But again, do these look like clouds to you? No, not really. Mm. So it's just finding these little things out like that. That's perfect. That's not even drawn over. There's something down here. That's probably the eye down here, and it's moving in that direction. Something's popping off the top.
Mm.
And so it's not seeing one of these. It's seeing 100 photographs like this to where, yeah, that's not a cloud. There's something in there. There's an object in there pushing the stuff around. And sometimes it's really hard to tell, and other times it's like blatantly obvious that it's an object. Here, again, it's moving to the left. This is trailing off the back of it. And then when you flip it, there's something about the human eye that can see the black on top of a lighter background than the other way around. That's what I find in the feedback that I get, the same kind of thing.
Mm.
I mean,
with these clouds here and things like that, we're talking about like essentially tendrils. It looks like, I don't know, it kind of looks like the ghosts from Pac-Man in the cloud sort of thing, just literally wobbling around and having little tails on them sort of thing.
Yeah. I always explain that as exhaust rather than breath. But I've referred to them as craft almost all along, but it could be just the way they breathe, the way they pop off. And when they do so, they show themselves that way. I mean, they could be sitting there the whole time and you wouldn't know it until they did pop off. And then you start seeing the engines and you follow the plume back to the object. So you look for the tightest formation of plasma. And that really gives away the details. I mean, there, it's in there. That's probably the bottom of it right there. Again, straight lines right there. Another straight line there. There's maybe some up above.
Also, bear in mind, we've got radio listeners who can't see what we're doing. So
true. Yep.
Making that a little bit more obvious for them. So we've got basically what look like cloud formations that have had their colors adjusted. And you can see sort of like little triangular shaped patterns in the clouds with the sort of spiny tendrils coming off of them, essentially. It looks sort of like an exhaust to a degree.
And initially, Vinny, this is something that brought me from the military aspect to the possible just natural life aspect, because I didn't see them all at first. And I was only able to pick out a few at a time. But the more I photographed and the more I realized there's more and more and more. Where do I draw the line? Where do I say this can't be produced by Triangular Craft, or it can be? And to me, the revelation a couple of years ago was all the cumulus clouds are made by triangles. They all are. And if I can say that, what about the other types of clouds? And what about the other, how many types of clouds did NASA say that are now? I mean, it's like 40. It's something ridiculous. It went from 9 to 40 in a couple of years. Mm. So I think
Well, I think that's mostly just a PR campaign to cover up for how messed up the clouds are looking due to the fucking chemtrails.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yep. I think so too.
Oh, there's now 90 different other types of clouds. Really? You came up with that in a couple of years, did you? Yeah. That didn't have anything to do with the documentary, What in the World Are They Spraying, coming out and talking about the clouds and the weird formations that they're in because you're frickin' spraying us, was it?
No, no, nothing to do with that.
All right. I believe you.
Did I mention the whole chemtrail thing where it kind of came across to me? I was downloading those USGS NASA satellite photos in July, and I downloaded something I shouldn't have on like July 31st, I think. And they said, if you don't have the right equipment or the right software, don't download this file. Well, me being stupid, I did. And it was like 150 megs, and I ran it. And this file started taking down my hard drives left and right. H drive went down, a restart, the C drive started going down, restart the D drive. And I'm like, oh, I fucked up somehow. So on August 1st, oh, let me stop this. August 1st, 2011, I walked outside and I saw something very similar to this. And I'm like, that's a chemtrail plane.
When he says this, he's talking about a big chemtrail plane with four shoots of jets coming out of the back of it. Yep.
Yeah. So I was thinking, I've seen the different types of materials up there. Is it coming from chemtrails? Are they seeding the sky with these materials to control the weather? And after I shut down my machine, I'm like, well, I'm going to get a new one, and let me follow this path and see where it goes. So I record a lot of IR footage, infrared, and I could tell that the chemtrails were getting sucked into something. It's like these invisible craft there were being affected by the chemtrails. The chemtrails would fall on top of them and just kind of like disappear into them. And it was really a theory, but again, after seeing it 10, 20 times, I'm like, this is starting to make sense. So if I can roll this footage here, there's a big chemtrailer coming over. It's got four exhausts on there just blasting. And then after a few seconds, I zoom out, and it's got what I call like shoestring chemtrails, plasma thingies at this point. I'm like, that's pretty interesting. Mm. So I zoomed in to see what I could find, and I found plenty of orbs bouncing off of these things, coming in and out. I think it's very much connected. And here's where it gets good. Now, it looks like there's a larger craft here that I diagrammed in there, but I really zoomed in on a tighter one below. And it seems like a brown plasma craft. It'll be coming up here in a second, right there. And some kind of object below it, and maybe another one off to the side. But remember, this is inside the chemtrail. So it's like the chemtrail targeted this thing and hit it, and it's naturally just taking it in. So if you watch the footage, you see all these white things passing by. I don't know if you can tell with your resolution. But there's spheres below, and the chemtrail has now gotten wrapped around these spheres. You can see a tendril coming between one getting sucked into the other. Right?
That's interesting. It almost looks like it looks like biological organisms, sort of like how and you look at how evolution started off, or how they claim evolution started off, and all these little bugs eating each other and sucking it into itself, that kind of thing, and then becoming part of its own nucleus. It's like that. It looks kind of like, I don't know, like somebody slurping up sperm noodles.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. So, yeah, I think the chemtrail program I think there's many phases, like I heard on the previous shows tonight. But if you've ever had Ilana Freeland on, she's on top of this. And independently, she came up with like seven different phases of chemtrails and what they can do. And her seventh phase was having to do with obscuration and detection of UFOs. And I heard her on a show. I contacted her, and we started trading notes, like I've been talking about with different people, and it makes a lot of sense. So it seems like they're being detected by the chemtrails. And the chemtrails are possibly, yes, affecting the weather. Weather control, if the powers that be understand the weather better than we do, that they're objects inside the clouds that make them form and make them move. If you salt them with some kind of metallic particle that they naturally just suck in by breathing, then can you hit them with a microwave pulse and make them move? Can you pop them around once you've got these materials inside? I think that could be the case, and that really just leads back to Cloverleaf, Operation Cloverleaf, and weather control. Here,
you'll have to explain that, actually, the Operation Cloverleaf for a second there.
Yeah, that's a military program. The documents can be found on easily, and it's about controlling the weather by 2025, I think it was. And how would they do it? And this is kind of leading towards it. I mean, we're coming around. I didn't really follow chemtrails and started until I really started realizing the craft up there and the objects. So if they were to salt, weaponize, militarize, electrify what's in the clouds, then you can control them. Then you can push them around. Okay. We've got a NEXRAD, what's it called? LIX, NEXRAD radar, that pops off all the times in split storms. We've also got these smaller, what I call substations around the area. And they're usually the white drums on top of towers. And those will do the same kind of thing. And I found that on radar, and these arcs will just pop up out of nowhere in split storms and destroy them or push them around. It's kind of like a storm going through a pinball machine. If you can salt them, oh, hold on, let me stop this. If you can salt them, put something on them or in them and hit them with the microwave, you're going to be able to push them and you're going to be able to essentially control weather. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Well, let's say theoretically, it's a biological organism that's actually made out of disparate water particles. So it appears kind of like a cloud, but it's not a cloud. It's actually a living creature that has connections between and that kind of thing. And it does sit there and it is capable of actually producing weather. And so they chemtrail over it. This creature sucks in the particulates into it, and then they hit it with a microwave pulse, and then that will affect the weather. That's what we're talking about, isn't it?
That's it. That's it, essentially. And it's pretty easy to understand. I mean, I don't know a lot about this kind of stuff, but it makes sense to me. I know if you put a fork, a metallic fork in a microwave, what's going to happen? It's going to start flipping out and frying. So for me, this makes a lot of sense. I mean, weaponizing the atmosphere, being able to control the weather through these techniques. And yeah, we're breathing it in, and they'll put out things like, what is it, HR 10585, House Resolution, that seems to protect everybody from any kind of things that are sprayed in the air. And then you read the final footnote, well, except when it comes to cases of national security. And then we can do whatever the fuck we want. You know? And these two boobs who were in the White House last year came out and said it multiple times on the TV. What is the greatest threat to national security? Climate change. Okay. So you start talking about climate change. Well, why is it? Well, we can't tell you because it's a matter of national security, and we can't tell you that we're spraying these things all over the place and it's killing you. And it's affecting these creatures, these objects, and we're controlling the weather. But shut up. Don't worry about it. Pay your taxes. Go to work.
Pay your taxes without question, so we can continue to spend them without accountability.
Yeah, buying bombs and just blowing up innocent people. Why not?
Yeah, well, it is the ideal.
Can I show you this lightning video real quick?
Yeah, sure.
I realized early that lightning was a part of the whole thing, and it seems like lightning's not random. It's like it gets relayed between point to point. A larger craft puts out a spark to a smaller one, and then to a smaller one after that. Kind of the way I explained how the system works. A larger craft, a smaller one pops off, smaller one pops off. The same seems true with lightning. And I've got multiple videos up online. This was a good one. This was recently, April 30. And this is pointing out towards a lake, a spot where I capture all kinds of crazy things. You can kind of see the little triangle up there. There it is. And another one here. And this is a storm coming in. There's wind blowing. Okay, so these things should move. And I diagrammed it there for you. 6 minutes later, I left the camera out, and it's still sitting there. It's like it's stationary. Again, boom.
So you're talking about two craft in between the bolts of a lightning, right?
Yeah.
Are actually kind of passing one to the other, sort of like a chain gang, a chain lightning.
Like a relay point, yeah. You can see the bolt in this one coming in from the right, hitting that object, and then popping off in the opposite direction. That's the way it seems. But, again, there's stories out there about the Navy developing a weather control technique via lightning in plasma pathways. But apparently it was just too expensive and they gave up on it. But the information's out there. So
yeah, right.
Is it military or is it an emulation of nature designed by the military?
So it, conceivably, like lightning bolts can be very, very destructive, essentially. So if you've got the capacity to literally channel that kind of power, you can destroy pretty much anything.
If they wanted, they could send a bolt right through your house right now.
Yeah.
If they had these little cloaked craft, you know, sitting above, they could do it. They've talked about it, using lightning as a weapon.
What's the term? It's a conductor or a catalyst or something like that. Something that you can send an electrical charge through.
A conduit?
Yeah, there you go. So essentially these are mid-air cloaked cloud-like conductors, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah, you could target anything. I mean, when I lived up in New York, I don't know how many photographs, 1, 2, 3, of lightning hitting the World Trade Center. And the third one that popped off, there's all kinds of, like, small objects all around the damn thing. And I've got an old 35-millimeter photograph of it. It's a great photo. And initially, I thought it was, well, it had to be dust. It had to be paper flying around. But now I understand, and I go back to the original. These objects were all around the Trade Center when it was getting hit by light. The weirdest thing. Here's something else, Vinny. Excuse me. Holograms. Can you see the face in this photo?
Kind of, yeah. I can see it's sort of a skull with the nose ripped off.
Yeah. Well, the way I looked at it, and I can see it in the sky without – this is an infrared image. Eyes and a nose and a mouth and a beard. And this thing just came floating across the sky. Call it a Godhead hologram. A lot of people see faces in the clouds, and they're going to blow this off as faces in the clouds, but it's not really.
Yeah.
There's so many distinct things.
Part of how the human brain works is that we try to find patterns in everything. That's the reason why we're still alive, essentially, because we found the pattern of moving grass was very similar to the pattern of a lion moving through the grass to try and eat your ass.
There you go. That's it. And I've seen some very distinct videos that are a lot better than mine with faces up there. Is it a hologram? Is it not? Could they be doing this with barium and strontium? And I've got an Army document that talks about barium and strontium niobate being used in holograms.
Mm. Right. Well, that was another element within the chemtrail phenomenon as well, that it was allegedly hooked up to the Project Bluebeam satellite holographic projectors, and that they actually needed metal particulates, particularly aluminium, barium, and strontium within the atmosphere so that the holograms could be made and appear to be more solid.
Yes, yes, yes. And this is something that draws me back to the military application. Is this military? Is it natural? See, there's a UFO coming up at the bottom there. No, maybe you didn't see it. But so that's why I've been bouncing back and forth all this time. Like, what is it? And but now I'm moving on to something else, and maybe we're dealing with all three, human, alien, and non-human, non-alien.
I don't know, Vinny. Sean. Well, here's the thing. It's very, very rare that you get somebody on a radio show who declares openly that they don't know exactly what they're talking about.
No, I mean, that's the way I've got to be. It's like people, as I said, people ask me, I don't know, but this is what you look for. What do you think?
Well, there's definitely something going on. Goodness knows exactly what it is, and I think that's the general theme of this episode. Thank you, Sean Gautreau, for coming on the show today with me, bro. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I do want you to remember that this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you want to go to my Patreon or the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and start up a dollar a month donation to help me keep the show going, that would be really, really special of you. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again sometime. Folks.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology, they have all these great things that they're gonna do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.